Hi there, I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane. If y'all are looking for a little American magic,
then put away your athames and wands and dig out your box of roots, stones, and bones.
This is New World Witchery.
In this episode, Kinky Bunny returns because we'll be looking at the fun and funky world of sex magic.
We'll be talking about aphrodisiacs, sex as a magical tool, and the ethics of erotic enchantment. Stay tuned. That was terrible.
Do you want to do it over?
No, that's fine. We can make that work.
Okay. You can always re-record it if you really hate it.
That's true. Yeah, that came off sounding a little Zach Brannigan. Nothing like the sexy, seductive power of the lure.
In this episode, we'll be looking at the fun and funky.
Thank you, Kiff.
I'm trying.
Kiff, you're cramping my style.
Okay.
What? Somehow that turned into a porno guitar. I've got to find a way to add porno guitar to our intro for this one. It is done. It shall be. Oh, that was awesome. Okay. So, yeah. Hi, Lane.
Hello.
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Kinky Bunny is back.
Kinky Bunny.
Kinky Bunny. So, yeah. Tonight is the Sex and Candy episode, right?
Exactly. It's funny. When we first sat down to talk about this podcast, we threw out ideas. We made a little Google Doc about it. You know, possible podcast ideas. And sex magic was one we came up with at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just never... We've always kind of skirted around the issue, I guess. I don't know why. But we figured, you know, May and Beltane and...
Yeah, and, you know, leading up to Midsummer and you've got all the...
Exactly.
Kind of wildness of that. So I think it works. I think we can make that fit. I mean, everything is going to have a double entendre in this episode. You understand that, right?
Oh, Lord, yes. So, I did.
Phrasing. I just got that. Why aren't we doing phrasing anymore? Oh, my goodness. Basically what you're saying is that we've looked at this idea a couple of times, and we've kind of skirted around it a few times with love magic and, mm-hmm. What was the other one? You know, even with the motherhood and childbirth lore that we did last time, there's, you know, it wasn't sex magic, but clearly, like, sex is involved with that process, so...
I would hope so. Usually. Not always.
Not always.
Usually.
Not always. No judgy. I'm
right.
I have good friends who have children that are not by sexual intercourse, and good on them for that. But in a lot of cases.
This is a judgment-free zone here.
Exactly. No issues. But in a lot of cases, in most cases, I think that sex does wind up being a precursor to childbirth. So we kind of touched that way. Yeah, we just hit it a few different... Ah, dadgummit.
Yeah, hit that. Hit that topic.
I was going to say we hit it from a few different angles, but that was just so much worse.
Okay, we have to be grown-ups about this.
No, we don't. No one's paying money for this. I am 14 forever. Anyway, we will try to kind of rein it in and not be too juvenile, but...
Right, but you'll have to forgive us.
Yeah, forgive us. Occasionally things slip out.
See, I'm not laughing at these until you point them out. Okay, so we're going to start with aphrodisiacs, and we just kind of want to discuss a few of the, you know...
Yes.
Folky, you know, if anything's worked for us, stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah, that's, and so, this is a lot of different, you know, some of it's going to be folklore that we have read, and a lot of it's stuff maybe we've encountered in our lives in one way or another, and some of it maybe even stuff that that has worked for us. So, do you want to start? You got anything on deck?
Sure. Well, I will preface this by saying scent has always been a big deal for me. I like, you know, when guys wear cologne or when they have, you know, a particular scent. And I have always loved perfumes. I have so many different perfumes, so many different ones. I could wear a different one for, I think, every day of the month and not repeat. But so one that I'm continually drawn to and one that has absolutely worked for me is vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard, you know, vanilla is absolutely an aphrodisiac. And I remember several Halloweens ago, a long, long time ago, I was fairly young. Not that I'm old now, but you know what I mean. and it was actually a full moon. It was that landed on Halloween. It was pretty cool. And I had put on vanilla that night with a purpose. And I don't know. See, I think this is part of the reason we've kind of skirted around this topic, because there's a lot of really personal stuff for us
mm-hmm.
that we're putting out there. So anyway, bear with me.
Yeah.
There was this guy that I...
You wound up in his business. I get it. You wound up in his business. It's cool.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but in a little bit more of a romantic way. We remain friends, you know, to this day. But it was a really... romantic is the wrong word. I guess erotic
mm-hmm.
experience. My friend was having a party. We all went out. She had a bunch of land, a big field, a bunch of woods. We all went out and kind of ran around. It was like the Wild Hunt almost. It was crazy. And we all kind of ended up in this giant field. And I just remember not even like making out. It was just like he was touching my face and, you know, kissing a little bit. And I just remember, like, the smell of vanilla and the full moon on me, and it was very, it was crazy. Mm-hmm. It was really nice. So I've always believed in the powers of using vanilla.
mm-hmm. No, well, I mean, after that experience, why are you not, like, rolling in sugar cookies every day before you leave the house?
No. Exactly. So I've always liked that, and that is definitely worked. I mean, it did not lead to sex, but, you know, I don't think it necessarily has to.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we'll get into this a little bit, but, you know, a large part of this kind of erotic or sexual magic is not necessarily all about, like, the release of the sex. It's a lot about buildup.
Exactly, yeah, and the precursor to that, I agree.
So yes.
What about you?
Well, you know, I wanted to comment a little bit on the scent thing. I remember when I was a teenager, and, you know, when you're a teenager, you pretty much anything that you can find that has to do with sex, you will read or you will, you know, get into in some way, shape, or mm-hmm. form, because you want to know everything about it. Partially so that you know what you're doing whenever the chance arises, and partially so that if somebody asks you a question, like, you can sort of fake it.
Right.
Fake your way through the conversation. It's not, you know, bags of sand, or like it is, you know, 40-year-old virgin.
40-year-old virgin.
Right. So, I remember reading, there was a book called Joy of Sex, I think was the title.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that.
Yeah, I think that the authors were a couple. The last name was Gray, maybe. And it was this, you know, it's this book from the 70s that gets into a lot of different things about sex. And one of the things that they talk about is this sort of... the erotic quality of actual bodily fluids. Mm. And so, like, women, one of the most powerful aphrodisiacs a woman can do is to take a little bit of her vaginal secretions and put them just a little tiny dab behind her ears. And because it's a pulse point and it heats up, it releases this sort of light, very, very almost unnoticeable scent, but it has a strong amount of pheromones in it.
Oh, so, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was. Again, this was written in the 70s, so it was, I mean...
A little bit freer.
Yeah, yeah, and they were definitely kind of leaning on that. It wasn't like necessarily a book on free love, but it was definitely a book on kind of sticking with the natural and the
right.
And it was very interesting. You know, it was one of those things I thought was very, very interesting at the time. And I definitely do find, like, you know, I don't necessarily want to go around smelling everybody's business all the time. I'm not a dog, but you know, in the heat of the moment, that can be a very powerful thing. So
yeah, I can see where you're going with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can definitely see that as a powerful agent of aphrodisiac quality. For me, scents, I don't know, like, I always want to smell really good, but I tend to lean towards things like bay rum scents. And that's, you know, I have no idea if that smells good on me or not. I'm just going to go with it until somebody tells me it doesn't work.
I don't know. I mean, I've never been close enough to you to be like, Corey smells good, but I've never been like, wow, Corey stinks. I've never had that thought. So
I am completely neutral in my odors. My body odor.
If you're not offensive, you're good with me.
My body odor is the James Taylor of the body.
That's a really good comparison.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, the thing I think is, for you, vanilla clearly works, and it clearly works in terms of how it appeals to you, how it has effects on others when you are wearing it. But I think it's really interesting, like, a scent that smells really good on one person may not smell good at all on another person. So I think it's interesting how body chemistry affects those scents.
Absolutely. I actually sold perfumes and stuff like that to people when one of my old jobs. And one thing we absolutely recommend trying, or, you know, telling people is don't just try it on the blotter. You know, you really have to try it on your skin. Your chemistry will absolutely react and change with all the different ingredients. And then there's also, you know, there's top notes and base notes and the mid notes, and different things will come out on different people. So, you know, the more complex a scent is, the more different it can smell on different people. So vanilla may smell awful on you, but, you know, great on me. Or, you know, there was one that had a lemon scent to it, and it smelled like cleaning products on one woman, but it smelled amazing on somebody else. So it really is about reacting with your own scent, which I think is even cooler to me.
Yeah, it really personalizes the power of that.
Exactly.
And that's something, you know, if you get into, like, you know, just talking about, like, hoodoo and hoodoo conjure oils, a lot of times the when you're talking about, like, the older style root workers, and you would go to them for an oil, they were custom blending for you. They would work with what you specifically needed. So it was sort of like having a personal, I mean, it was a magical perfumer, but they were, you know, performing that service for you. So there's a precedent to that. I remember when we were in New Orleans, one of my favorite things that we did was we went into this really old perfumery and, like, to, you know, smell these different kind of custom blends that they do, which is just amazing. And there's a real power to that.
I agree. The other thing that I want to add about scent is it is a huge memory trigger. I mean, for me especially, but I know for a lot of people, people just associate certain scents with certain times, and, you know, you smell one thing and it can just immediately take you back, and, like, you feel how you felt, and it's just, it's bizarre. It's like no other memory trigger for me than a scent is just crazy.
Yeah.
I like that aspect of it too.
Definitely. Yeah. And I mean, okay. So moving from the scent, I mean, there's, you know, a lot, there are so many aphrodisiac food related. I mean, if you talk about scent and food plays, I'm saying, that the scent kind of moves into the realm of food very easily in terms of food being an aphrodisiac.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so there's a lot, I mean, there's so many foods that are considered aphrodisiacs. I mean, people say, you know, strawberries, chocolate covered strawberries, chocolate in general. So, I mean, I don't think we'll be able to do a laundry list, but I was just thinking, like, you know, maybe 1, 2, 3 things food or drink wise that have worked for you.
Nothing food wise. No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love food. I love to eat and I love to try new things, but nothing ever, but, you know, I haven't really thought of anything like that. Like, if I'm going to do some sort of, okay, I need an aphrodisiac, which, you know, I don't usually think of, I don't think of food, you know, it has never really done anything for me. I mean, how you always hear anecdotal stuff though, like, you know, oysters and People say green M&Ms and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, the sex M&Ms. Oh, how can we pass that up? That's we have to give props to the green M&Ms. So yeah, in oysters, you mentioned oysters. For me, that actually mm-hmm. has worked. It's one of my favorite sort of summertime foods anyway. But I recently got my wife to start eating them, and now she's kind of addicted to them. And it's always one of those things. It's not that we're specifically consuming them for their aphrodisiac qualities, but it's certainly, I don't know, there's something kind of sexy about it, and you feel kind of sexy when you have oysters and then really cold white wine or really cold beer. Like, there's just something kind of sexy to it. So,
at the risk of getting crude, some people have said it's not like actually ingesting them. It's because the meat kind of looks, vulvic, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of cunnilingus, I guess.
Yeah, no, I would believe that. And there's, you know, the briny quality of the juice, even though it's briny and sweet. I mean, not to be vulgar or anything, not to get too far into it, but there's an element of that.
But no, but again, we can be adults about that. Like, we can laugh like 12-year-olds. We can also be adults about this.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, there really is something to it. You know, the idea of the, I hate saying vaginal secretions over and over again, because that makes it sound, there's a phrase that I hear it called, in witchcraft actually, which is mare sweat.
Oh, that's interesting.
I know. It's very fascinating. Peter Padden actually does a really interesting discussion on sexual fluids and magic, which I would highly recommend people check out. But he mentions that as mare sweat. But there's that quality to it where it's that, you know, briny, sweet quality when you're drinking the oysters. And then the alcohol kind of plays into that. Alcohol by itself is kind of an aphrodisiac.
Right.
It can also be a killer.
So is it... is it almost kind of tiptoeing towards sympathetic magic then?
You know, that's a really excellent way to think of it, because I think they've done some scientific tests to show there's no chemical components that definitely cause aphrodisiac sensations.
Right.
But
then again, I mean, I don't eat phallic foods and feel raring to go. You know, I don't eat a banana and be like, how you doing?
Okay, so you say that. I had a roommate in college who very specifically, when she ate bananas, she would peel them and she would never eat them like directly from the banana. She would break off a piece and eat it, because like she'd been raised in such a way that like eating a banana that other way gave a bad message to people and sent the wrong message to people who were watching her do it and could lead to problems.
Okay, now that I feel like that is true for some women. I mean, I'm not trying to speak for every woman listening, but I definitely am conscious of how I'm eating phallic foods.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if I have a popsicle or something, you know, I'm very careful not to go crazy on it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I cannot believe this. Anyway, or like, you know, a hot dog, anything like that. You know, you do have to be kind of like, okay. How's this coming across? If you're out in public, it's like, maybe I shouldn't eat it like that.
And so, like, okay, I love hot dogs. I really love.
I do too.
I
really and corn dogs.
Hot dogs. Oh, one of my favorite foods in the world. And right now, Sonic has kind of like got me cornered, because they have like 17 different kinds of hot dogs, some of which are in pretzel buns, and they have this like infinite number of slushes and an infinite number of shakes. So
milkshakes have been my downfall lately.
Oh man, they're killing me.
Me and the baby have loved them.
But like, so hot dogs, I get that the hot dog itself is kind of phallic shaped, but once you actually get on a bun with all the crap that goes on it, if anyone thinks that's sexy, they're into like the crazy messy German porn that,
right.
Like, 'cause there's nothing sexual about like a dog full of kraut and mustard.
Well, I was thinking more like, a corn dog, you know, like on a stick or something like that. But it doesn't matter. What I'm trying to say is, sometimes I think you do have to be kind of careful about how you eat it. But still, it doesn't inspire sexual feelings Mm-mm. in me necessarily. Okay. But so there's something to be said about oysters, I think, is my whole point.
that's what we're roundabout getting back to. Yes, and I would support that based on experience that I've had. The other one that we've had really good experience with is a liqueur called Damiana,
mm-hmm.
Or Damiana. It comes in this, it's a Mexican liqueur, herbal liqueur, made from Damiana leaf extract, which is, I have heard, but have not done any research to corroborate that it is one of the few scientifically verifiable aphrodisiacs because it causes circulatory dilation, particularly in sensitive areas.
Oh, okay.
Based on experience, we buy this. It's this bottle that's shaped like a Venus of Willendorf body. Like, it's this big, beautiful body. I'll show it to you. I've got a bottle of it here.
Cool.
I'll show it to you sometime. And we only use a little bit. We mix it into margaritas. And my wife has definitely reacted to it.
That's pretty cool. I've never heard of this.
Yeah. It's
this liqueur.
It's pretty fascinating. Like, it's not even that it's so the way that she put it, I don't want to get too much into her business because I don't share all her business, but the way she sort of explained it was it was almost a biological reaction in her.
Wow.
Like, it wasn't even necessarily a mental thing like you would think a lot of aphrodisiacs are. Like, she just suddenly had this biological,
it was like a need almost.
Wasn't even a need, it was a biological, it was like, oh well, everything's ready, you know. It was that kind of a, like, you know, there was everything was just kind of in place because of that liqueur.
Okay.
It's very strange. It's a very strange thing. And for me, you know, definitely sort of, you know, it was like, ha ha.
All right.
Yeah. It was definitely like, you're going to be having the sex tonight. You know, that kind of a thing.
Right. So any other foods or anything like that that have worked for you or that you know of?
No, I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I mean, there's always chocolate. Dark chocolate is always a stimulant for us.
Yeah, I mean, it has caffeine in it. I feel like I've read that it kind of that it releases endorphins. Did I make that up?
No, I've heard something similar. I've heard that it bonds to the same receptors in the brain that THC does, so it releases pleasure.
Right.
So, which would sound like an endorphin to me, but... Again, okay, let me really, really heavily say, not a medical scientist, not a scientist of any kind. I am not speaking as any kind of medical professional. I'm only perpetuating hearsay and rumors. So please, if you're kind of come at this and say, no, there's no scientific proof of this, I would totally believe that there's no scientific proof of anything that has been said here. This is anecdotal, and I would encourage people to look up the science for any of this, so... So, disclaimer aside.
Yes.
So there's, you know, smell and taste. Touch-wise, I mean, obviously there's lots of textures that some people find sexy, some people don't. Some people love the feel of silk or taffeta, and some people find it essentially to be like an overnight stay strapped to a gurney in a hospital, so.
Yeah, the feel of, like straight-up cotton,
mm-hmm.
Not knit into a t-shirt or, but like cotton plucked or like, cotton, balls, like you say in the top of a pill bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, just talking about it. Ugh. It makes my teeth hurt. Like I cannot express the disgust and weird texture aversion I have to it. I cannot open my own pill bottles without like scissors or little pliers or something, or my husband to get it out. I cannot touch it. It disgusts me so much. And then the other day I had some dental work done. I put cotton in my mouth without even telling me, and I almost threw up right there. There's just something about the texture that I cannot stand, but that's the extreme opposite of what we're talking about. But I completely see what you're saying. But like, you know, a fur rug or something maybe.
Right. Like everybody pictures like the bearskin rug with George
Costanza, right.
George Costanza stretched out on it.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's, and, you know, the cotton point is really, really valid because it's kind of the antithesis of the aphrodisiac. You know, it works the opposite way.
It's the squeakiness and the,
yeah.
I hate it. It sends chills up my spine. I hate it.
You're not the only person I've heard of that has that problem. So
extreme aversion to it. I just cannot take it.
Yeah, no, that's...
But anyway.
Yeah, you're not unusual for having that. That's I know other people who have that same issue, so... So yeah, what about like unusual aphrodisiacs? I know one that I've read about in Ozark lore is turkey bones. Girls will hang turkey bones above their door. If I can, there's a photo I'll link to that shows this practice. They'll do that because it sort of draws the boys in.
Okay.
And
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, and for some folks it's like a courtship thing, but for some folks it's just like a you know, Sally Mae is feeling a little am I peckish, and so
it can be like a signifier.
Yeah, kind of. It's okay. Just like a open for business thing.
All right, so the red light is on.
Yeah, like instead of a red light district, you got your turkey bone district, which actually sounds a lot kinkier. So, what about, do you know any unusual or interesting ones?
This isn't really like a folklore one, but I know a lot of women are turned on by men's forearms.
Mm.
You ever heard of this?
Mm-mm.
Like, I myself find a man's forearm quite attractive. Like when they look strong, but they're still lean. Mm-hmm. And even sometimes when they're a little bit veiny, like when you're wearing a button down and then you roll up the sleeves,
mm-hmm.
that's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I hear that from so many women. I don't know. Yeah. There's just something about it. I don't know why.
Yeah. Fair enough. Cool. Well, okay, we'll just take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about ethics and using sex magic as a tool.
Okay, great.
Tool.
By a bent line. By a straight line. By a crooked line. The Crooked Path, a podcast for modern cunning folk with Peter Pannon.
My name is Scarlett. I'm an eclectic neo-pagan witch based in Wisconsin on the shores of Lake Michigan. On my podcast, Lakefront Pagan Voice, I share my perspective on pagan topics, life, local flavor, and a few of my favorite things. I'm always learning, and I hope you'll explore with me. You can find my show on iTunes and at Podbean. And here is a cow.
Hi, this is Chris Oropello calling out from the infinite and the beyond, beckoning you to join me down at the crossroads. Where witches gather for the Sabbat, offerings are made, pacts are signed for musical fame, and we cross paths with today's most influential pagans, occultists, and deep thinkers about topics and issues that matter. The conversations are sure to be inspiring, insightful, entertaining, and always engaging as we attempt to push the community forward, all while hearing some great music by today's best pagan and pagan-inspired musicians and bands. Visit the show online at infinite-beyond.com or find the show on iTunes or Stitcher. And meet me down at the crossroads for a little bit of music, magic, and a whole lot of paganism. Down at the crossroads is pagan culture for the seasoned pagan.
I smell sex and candy. Yeah, mm-hmm.
I used to get so embarrassed when that song was playing in the car and my mom was driving.
I can kind of imagine why. I always, like, the guy's voice is so unsexy in that song. Like, it doesn't ever, like, have an impact on me. And then the video was just, like, a spider crawling all over a thing, and you're like, well, that couldn't be less sexy.
I always remember that video on Pop-Up Video.
Yeah. Not dating ourselves there, are we?
Nope. So, okay. The ethics of sex magic.
Yes, and how people might use sex magic as a tool. I think let's actually start with that part first, because I think it raises the ethical questions.
Right. Well, I feel like there are two different kind of ways to think about it that we're going to probably talk about both. One is using the act of sex as a tool towards other things and raising that energy, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other is using magic to get sex.
Yes.
So, yeah. So let's start with sex itself as the tool.
Yes. So, first of all, do you have any personal experience using it that way?
No, not really. I've had a couple experiences. My husband and I were hand fasted, mm-hmm. Before we were married. And we had a very powerful night that night, again, without getting too mm-hmm. Personal details.
Right.
But it wasn't for anything. It just, you could tell it raised a lot of energy. I'll put it that way.
Sure. Yeah. And I think sex in general, specifically when it's, I don't want to say when it's well done or well executed, but there's a certain synchronicity that can happen with certain kinds of sex.
Yeah. I mean, there's sometimes you're not kind of really into it, but you're like, okay, let's do this, whatever. But sometimes there's a different level to it. And I definitely feel like that can be magical.
Yes, absolutely. Even if there's not a goal in mind with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I have actually, used sex magic a couple of times. Once was for the conception of one of my children.
I think you told me about this.
Yeah. So it was a little different than using the actual act of sex. It was more of an invocation of a specific entity mm-hmm. during the act of sex and sort of letting it be a passive semi-possession to sort of facilitate this action. And it was good. Everything wound up really, really well because of it, but, it was very interesting. And then I've also used a sort of an energy raising technique for, actually for communing with certain divine forces.
Okay.
So
what am I trying to ask here? So when you're doing it, oh, that did not come out right.
Phrasing.
Phrasing. So, are you communing or talking or receiving messages during the act of or afterwards or both?
No, it's usually during the act of, and it's frequently kind of an image and a feeling where very specific things sort of flash through. But I may also get, to have conversations with whatever entity that is. Specifically, I spent a lot of time trying to get in contact with kind of a dark goddess figure for a while. And that's one of the things that she particularly wanted was the sacrifice of sexual fluid. So,
okay.
So that's, that was a component of the working with her. And in doing that during the, as again, we're getting, we talked about the buildup process, and when you're doing the buildup process, that's kind of where all the conversation is happening. And there's part of the conversation that is, there's a sexual edge to it, but that almost almost becomes one of those things where the sexual edge is completely subsumed in this conversation about how do I get to where I can really commune with, my fetch spirit. And there's no reason that should be sexy, but there's a sexual edge to it.
Okay. I don't have any experience with this. I feel like I'm just, I have no idea what this would be like.
You've just been lying back and thinking of England this whole time. It's just,
Well, no, are you kind of half focused on your partner?
If there's a partner present, yes.
Okay. So so you can masturbate and do this as well.
Yes, absolutely. So, and okay. I mean, that was something.
Cause I was going to ask you, not you personally, but just your feelings on, do you feel like you can do this without the other person?
And yes, I do think that it's a completely valid practice. Aleister Crowley, got into trouble because he used to talk about sacrificing 1,000 white babies every day.
Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing at that.
Right. And of course, the crazy media people would react to that being like, oh my God, he's slaughtering thousands of innocent children. And other people were like, no, he's talking about And like there was no nice way to take it. So,
oh my Lord. That is so funny.
Yeah, that would be Aleister Crowley.
So Okay, so again, we're getting into some things that are a little personal.
Sure.
Have you heard of the concept of, like, edging?
Such as?
Like, bringing someone to the brink of orgasm and then letting back, and then bringing and then letting back.
Yes, that's I don't want to say it's a tantric technique, but I know I've heard about it in conjunction with Tantra.
Okay. So I wonder if that would, like, be helpful with communicating, because I'm sorry, my dogs are crazy. Hang on.
Do you have a Wookiee?
Hang on a second. Hold on.
Yes, Lane has a Wookiee.
Okay. I muted my microphone. I hope that worked.
Yes.
So I wonder if that would be beneficial in, like, you know, communicating and talking and all that, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I'm sure it would be. And I mean, there really is something to the, like, the buildup without the release, that can be very powerful. I've worked with that as well, in a masturbatory capacity, a solo capacity. Mm-hmm. But I've attempted that. That doesn't always work out.
Which I think is part of, like, the learning process, mm-hmm. like, you know, being able to do that, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I've never really tried it, so.
It takes such a tremendous amount of control, and I'm a very ecstatic person. So, I mean, I think that there are people that can do it and can maintain that kind of control throughout it, and that's really important, I think. If you're going deep into sex magic, and I'm only speaking here from what I've read, but all that I've read basically says, yes, anybody can participate in sexual magic. Anybody can do certain acts of sexual magic, but a really adept person at it is going to have a tremendous amount of self-control.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really going to be able to focus and refrain. And it's usually strongest with another partner as well. Like, especially if you can get a partner that's in conjunction with your desires and wants,
mm-hmm.
and get both people focused on the same goal.
Right.
So, that kind of gives us a nice, you know, jumping off point into the idea of ethics here too.
Okay.
Because if we're talking about both partners being in sync, you know, when I did the fertility aspect of things, and by the way, we're not really addressing fertility as a component of sex magic tonight. So I do apologize if you were hoping we'd get into that. That's actually, it's a big enough topic. We think it'll get its own show at some point. But when I was doing the more of the fertility kind of a thing, you know, I did that without the consent or knowledge of the other person. We were both consenting to having another child, obviously, but, it was not, you know, she wasn't aware that that was going on. She wasn't aware that I was trying to get into that headspace about it. So mm-hmm. it was a very personal thing.
Did you tell her eventually, or is that?
No.
Okay. I mean, again, judgment-free zone. That's, you know, I know you guys don't necessarily agree on certain things.
Yeah, so. This would just be something where she just, it's, there's a, I think it's a Confucian saying that goes, respecting ghosts and gods, but away from them. And my wife very much operates off of that.
Yeah, and I respect that.
So she just doesn't want to know about it.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I have no issues with that. So there's, you know, again, that's an issue where she was not consenting. Now, it's consenting sounds like a weird thing. She was not a participant in the sexual magic side of things.
She definitely was a participant, though, in the sex. It was not rapey.
No, yes. That was...
Let's not give that impression at all.
No. So, but the energy building and the, you know, direction of that energy was all on my end.
Right.
But so, I mean, that raises some interesting questions. I think there are some people that will hear that and be like, oh, you really, that was not the right way to handle that situation. And that might be true. I don't know.
But here's my question. If you're both working towards the same goal, which would be to have another child,
mm-hmm.
Why would you, like, I don't see, personally, I don't see the badness in it, I guess, because you're working towards it in a different way that she may not necessarily know about, but that's still what you're working towards.
Yes. And I mean, I think that specific example, is an easily understandable, it's a safe enough example where you can say, oh,
right,
you guys really were working towards the same thing, just with different tools and blah, blah, blah. And that's fine.
Right.
But you know what?
But you're right though. It can go to different things. Like if you're working towards something that she has no idea about, you know, say she doesn't want to move,
right.
Say she wants to stay where she is. And you really want a job across the country and you know, that would be great for you. And that's what you put your energy towards. Then yeah, that's a little on the fence for me.
Right. Cause you're using the other person, to accomplish your ends and your goals. Even if it's something that doesn't even really directly affect them, like you're just like, you know what, I really want a new car, you know, and you're just kind of using that sexual energy to build up to be like, and a new car. It's not, you know, do they need to know? Is it incumbent upon you to let them know that happens? And I don't know. I don't think there's an easy answer to that. I think it depends on the situation.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's very situational.
Yeah. It's tough. And I mean, and it's interesting because, you know, a lot of the stuff that we practice, or we've gotten into practicing, you know, from the hoodoo derived traditions and things like that, there's a lot of emphasis on using sexual control magic. Like, for example, in hoodoo, there's a lot of like, you take the man's semen and you put it on a string and you knot the string and then he can't have sex with anybody but you. Mm. Or you'll slip menstrual blood into his food so that he won't be able to, go off and sow wild oats with anybody else. So there's a lot of that, like,
Control
magic that can happen through sex as well. And through, you know, and I mean, I know menstrual blood is not explicitly a sexual fluid, but it's loosely tied enough to this subject that I feel like we can address it. So, I mean, how does that sit with you?
Not very well. It's to me, it falls in the same camp as, you know, as love magic. And I know it's been a while since we've done that episode, but I just don't really feel like you should be kind of infringing on someone's will like that. I mean, again, it's hard for me to talk about this because that's all you're kind of doing with magic in general is, you know, influencing things and changing things around. You know, I understand that, but you know, to like the classical version of a zombie comes up, you know, like the Haitian zombie where they have to kind of do what you say and you're their master and all that, you know, not the knot braiding any kind, yeah. Unless you tell them to. That's just kind of what it conjures up for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't, if you have to keep your partner's, if you keep your partner on a leash, basically, then maybe they're not the one for you.
Yes. And I think,
you know,
in our modern age, especially, that's a little easier to say. I do think, you know, historically, if you're looking at these time periods where it would have been much harder for a woman to be on her own or for, you know, for a woman to be abandoned by a man.
Okay. You know, okay. I can definitely see that. Yeah. That makes sense.
In a historical context, I mean, I don't judge anybody for doing any of this because I
no, no, no.
circumstances, like, obviously. And I don't think you're judging either. So
judgment free zone.
But for you
no
personally.
No judges here. Yes, exactly. I would not do it.
Because right. You're in a position where, you know, if your man was, you know, stepping out on you, you'd be like, I'm throwing a pot in the pan at your head and we're filing for divorce, you know?
Exactly.
And it's okay. It'll work out for you. But there was, you know, there's a time period where that's not what happens. You know, the woman, you know, gets shamed and gets kind of pushed to the edges of society. At best, she may have a few other women that can support her and help her, but there's no guarantee of that. So I would get that practice very, very easily at that time period.
Absolutely. But nowadays it's a little harder for me to, I was going to say swallow phrasing.
Phrasing.
It's a little harder for me to accept that. just because, again, you know, if you got to do that, you've got to examine other things.
Yeah.
You know, it can't just, you can't leave it all to magic.
Yeah. And at the same time, you know, if your only tool in your magical arsenal, I mean, nobody's only tool in their magical arsenal is sex magic. But if that's like your go-to tool, it's a little bit like, you know, mowing your yard with a shotgun, you know, it's a lot more force than is necessary for a lot of spell crafting. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's definitely something where it's, I don't know, like, I think for certain big things, and I mean, this is coming from a guy who is, you know, trying to commune with a single entity using solo sex magic. So I don't know if I have any room to say anything about it, but I just think that, you know, maybe save the sex magic for things that are really at a deep level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because, I mean, sex is very personal and very intimate, you know? That's what it's supposed to be. So, you know, I don't think that using it for any old thing is really smart, I guess.
Yeah, it's powerful because it combines these elements of, you know, extreme life with almost extreme death. You know, the French call an orgasm a petit, mm-hmm. which is like, it's the little death.
Yep.
And so it's, there is this weird, you know, there are people who literally pass out the second they have an orgasm. And it's not, yep. it's a physiological reaction for them. It's just what they do. And it's just one of those things that it really is attempting to leash a lot of incredibly powerful forces.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of those things that, like, I highly encourage people to try it, but to be responsible about it, and, you know, and especially if you're doing something that's going to impact somebody else that you're having sex with, maybe
right.
experience, says the guy who didn't say anything about using it for conception magic. I am a walking contradiction. So
what are the things that, you know, you would kind of see as acceptable to use it for?
Well, I definitely think, like, if you're doing, like, anything where you're trying to access that divine plane of being,
mm-hmm.
because I do feel like there's so much mythology around the idea of, like, people coming together and forming a single unit, right? So there's the story.
Yes.
You know, have you ever seen Hedwig and the Angry Inch? Where
No.
They recast the myth of, I think it's a myth from the Metamorphoses. Where at the beginning of time, everybody is a man and a woman stuck together with two heads and four arms and four legs. But they're too powerful, so Zeus slices them in half. And some of them are two men stuck together. Some of them are men and women stuck together. Some of them are two women stuck together. And they spend the rest of their lives trying to reconnect. So that shows up in mythology. There's a lot of, like, sexual lore that gets folded into mythology. So I think that sex winds up working at this incredibly mythological level.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of, I feel like a lot of the ritual that, you know, certain traditions do are centered around, like, the sexual union of, you know, a male and female deity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole Athame entering into the cup and all that.
Right, the great rite, yeah.
Right. It's, you know, a lot of it is that unity, is the joining together of two, I guess, opposite things.
A complementary, yeah.
But complementary.
No, and there's a power in that union. And likewise, I mean, I think you can also use it, you know, moving beyond the plane of the divine. I think you can use it anything where you're really trying to shift the balance of power in some way. So, I mean, I think it would be very powerful for court case work. I think it would be very powerful, obviously, for love work in certain cases. But there's a trick to that, which is that it raises so much power that it leaves a vacuum.
Mm.
And so you have to be able to fill that with something too. And so if you, you know, you hear all these stories about people who have these really great sexual relationships and they're just angry sex, but then they can't like get along at all outside of the sex.
Yep. Had one of those.
Right. And it's one of those things where like it creates this amazing amount of energy, but then there's this vacuum afterwards and all you do is implode on each other.
Yeah. You're not good together.
Yeah.
Except in the bedroom.
Yes. Which can be fun. I mean, that's fun.
It can be. And it, you know, that was a really, like, I don't mean fun, like it sounds, but that was a really fun time in my life, you know? I mean, he left a good impression on me. Like, we weren't fighting all the time. It's just, we just weren't good together, you know?
Right.
We weren't going to get married or anything.
Right. But you had your kinky bunny moments, and that's all.
Right, exactly.
Oh, with the kinky bunny side of things, one thing that does show up occasionally in sex magic is the idea of using bondage for sexual magic.
Oh.
Which can be very powerful because you add this extra element of restraint, and there's a highly ritualistic aspect of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you combine that kind of ritual drama, that theatrical experience with the like full body sensation that comes with that, and there's almost like a sacrificial victim thing going on.
Yeah. Well, you're giving yourself up if you agree to be tied up. And then if you are doing the tying, then, you know, you have a lot of power.
Yes.
You know, like not this is going to make me sound like a crazy person, but not that I ever would. But, you know, you could do anything. You could stab that person to death right there and they couldn't do anything about it. You know, they're giving themselves to you.
I'd like to use my safe word now.
Exactly.
Banana.
Foliage. But, you know, I'm just saying, anything can happen. You yes. have to have a extreme level of trust to let that happen. I agree. It's very powerful.
Yeah.
I swear I'm not crazy. I've not stabbed anybody.
So what happened to that boyfriend that was so
He's gone.
Why does your crawl space smell so funny? So what about you? What are some things that you can envision, like, you know, pulling out all the stops and really using a full-fledged sex magic, particularly with another person, for?
Well, I guess, really, if you two are agreed upon it, really anything that you're both working towards. You know, I really like the idea of the conception thing, you know, part with your partner's knowledge or not. But also just big things, like big changes in your life. Like, I don't know. It kind of sounds trivial when I say it, but say you're searching for a house. That's a huge deal. But the home really represents family and coming together. And, you know, it can be kind of a smaller, like a microcosm almost of the home. Does that make sense? Am I reaching too much?
No, I completely understand where you're going with that. You know, it's when you're performing the act of sexual magic, you're creating the energy that you want to fill that home with. I mean,
yeah. I can definitely see that. I mean, not just towards family stuff, but just big things, I guess you and your partner are working towards. I can't really think of anything more specific than that, but
you raised an interesting point with that, which is, you know, you're talking about like, oh, we want to find a house, you know, and I was looking for specifically a conception, you know, specifically communion with a specific goddess. I think this is one of those instances where you can't do a general prosperity sex magic spell. It's going to be too much energy going in too many directions and you're not going to get a result that does anything for you. You might get prosperity, but it might be in the craziest, like you might suddenly find yourself a hoarder, you know?
Right.
Like you have stuff, you have plenty of stuff, but you need to get rid of some of it, you know? And I really think like that's an element of it, is that you have to be able to focus so narrowly on what you want for it to work.
Yeah. Okay, so I had a question in my head that was kind of brought up as you were talking earlier when you said you could kind of use it towards love.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be pretty unethical personally, but do you think you one could use sex magic with one person to get another person?
Absolutely.
Because to me, it would almost be like a jealousy thing. Like, yes. You know, you kind of have their scent on you. Yes. And I can definitely see that happening.
Yes, that would be. And you know what? It would probably work incredibly well. And it would probably cause an intense amount of chaos in the process of doing it.
Probably,
You would really want, I mean, somebody would get hurt through doing that. But you could guarantee that you would get your result at least temporarily. So.
I was just thinking, you know, that'd be an interesting way to go about things.
Yeah, that's just one of those things where, like, I can imagine, like, you know, like in a scene in a movie, like, where's the, you know, the one that you're trying to seduce walks in and sees you with the other person, and you just kind of lock eyes for a second.
Right.
You're like, yeah, this could be you. That's horrible.
You know, that's the other thing, though. Like, I feel like having a lot of confidence in yourself helps. It is an aphrodisiac in itself.
Yes. Oh, man. You know, confidence is the sexiest thing in the world.
It is. So, you know, what's a better confidence builder for... you know, for sex is than having sex. It's like that saying with when you're finding a job, the best thing to help find a job is to have a job.
Yes.
You know, they're not going to hire an unemployed person.
Right. Have a job gets a job. Yeah.
Right. So anyway.
Yep. No, I agree. There isn't an aspect of that. What about like using, like, this is going to sound really funny, using sex magic to improve your sex life? Like, you know.
No, I can definitely say that because, you know, it was like we were saying, you know, some people can be kind of out of rhythm. But if you both come at it in a very focused way and you really focus on the other person and what they want or need, or maybe not even necessarily focusing on them, but on the energy and the joining together, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. I can definitely see that. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just, you know, you're like, I want to really, you know, spice up our sex life. So we're going to do a sex magic ritual and just see what comes of that, you know?
Right.
Maybe that would be too vague. I don't know. But it could be interesting if you have a really clear idea of what you're shooting for, so to speak.
Right. And I mean, and you could also, you know, introduce one like new thing that you've never done or something like that. And try to incorporate that somehow and, you know, see if that helps.
Banana. Foliage. Anyway. Well, all right. So yeah, any other aspects of sex magic ethics that we want to address?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, groovy. Well, cool. Then I guess we'll sort of start to wrap it up a little bit now. This should be, oh God. Phrasing.
Gotcha.
I can't even recover from that. So.
All right, wrap it up. Come on.
Anyway, so yeah, so this should be. I'm hoping this episode will be out in May. It'll be our second episode in May. We've got another one out that's about the Dark Mother. If you want to listen to that. And then we'll have hopefully some episodes in June, maybe in July. And then I'm imagining probably by August we'll take a short break. So I just want people to be prepared for that.
You may not be, but I'll be okay for August, I think.
Okay.
Probably not September though, but
yeah. And I'm kind of thinking like August will be when I'm moving to our new location and getting settled in there. So it may be possible to do something then. But I don't know for sure. And then September definitely will be out of pocket for you.
So, yes.
I'm guessing kind of October will be too.
Probably.
I do intend to pick back up the October storytelling special, so there will be something coming out by then. But
right.
But just, you know, I want people to be prepared that there may be some.
We can try. You never know. There may be some funny baby noises in the background, but that'd be okay.
Yeah, and there may just be, you know, a few episodes that are not as long or that are less focused than usual. Might just be kind of checking in with everybody, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So I have got a couple of folks that are that I'll probably be doing interviews with as well. So we may have some of those that I'll just kind of hold on to and release.
Cool. That'd be nice.
Emergency backup, you know. Not that they're emergency backup, the interviews will be awesome because the people are awesome, but I may be like, yeah, I just need something to have for August when I move, so I'll just set that one up. But I'll record it in June and have it go in August.
You'll be holding them and then releasing them.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry. I held it together. I can't anymore.
Oh, man.
I'm awful. I am 12.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Seriously. This is probably the most mature and most juvenile episode we have done.
I know, right?
Which is just awesome. So cool. I do know Supermoot will be happening in early September in Chicago area in conjunction with Chicago Pagan Pride Day.
That's so cool.
I know. I
wish I could go.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm like right down the middle on that one because I may be settled in enough to go for a couple of days for that one, mm-hmm. but it's not terribly likely, so.
Yeah. Well, if you do, you'll have to give everybody a hug for me.
I will, and there's a few folks that probably won't be able to come that have been to a lot of the previous ones, so mm-hmm. this may just be one of those years where there's either more new people than there are the folks who've done it every year, or it may be one of those situations where, you know, it winds up being a component of Pagan Pride Day, and it'll still be Pagan Pride, and it'll still be wonderful and awesome. So,
of course,
if I can't make it, I'll be sad.
Yeah,
but Firelight is graciously hosting that. So,
awesome.
So we'll try to keep people abreast of that. Stop it! Stop it!
I didn't say a word.
Stop it.
As my husband would say, you were thinking it.
You were thinking it very loudly. anything else going on? Anything going on with you? I know we talked about like stuff in our cauldron, stuff we're doing. Only thing I've got going on with you, I got some books I'm reading, and then I've been watching Salem, which you had not heard of until I mentioned it to you.
Well, I've just been out of the loop, dude. I've not really been like watching too much TV. You know, I don't have cable.
Good for you. Stay away from that. That is poison. It is terrible. I hate how TV just sucks my time up.
But it sucks my time anyway. I mean, I watch certain shows that I just love, you know, that are on like basic cable that we get with our antenna. and then I have some that I've watch, you know, that are off the air
right
for years now, but no, I don't know any new stuff coming on. I'm sorry, except for American Horror Story.
Yes, which will be a freak show theme.
Yes,
which I think,
but
kind of excited about. I don't know.
I am. I've heard it's going a little bit darker, back to more of its roots, which I'm very excited about. But you were saying with Salem that someone we know is going to be on there, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do want to give a quick plug. I haven't seen him on it yet. I haven't seen the latest episode, maybe the latest two episodes yet. But Papa Toadbone, who was on our podcast, I think he was like our second or third interview.
I wasn't on that for that interview, but I did listen to it.
Right. And I think we did a follow-up discussion afterwards as well. But
I remember liking his voice.
Yes. Oh, he's one of the nicest guys, and really, really smart, really knowledgeable, magician, sorcerer, folk magician. And I believe he's actually going to be like an actor on the show, not a regular, not like a huge part, but I think he'll be at least in a few scenes, on the show Salem, which is on WGN. And it's, I've been watching it. What I've watched of it is interesting. The idea behind it is, what if the Salem Witch Trials, you know, we're just going to throw historical accuracy kind of out the window. I'm not going to worry too much about that. And what if the Salem Witch Trials, what if what was really going on was there really were witches. They just weren't the ones that were being, they weren't the ones that were being hung.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were actually kind of running the show, which is like, oh, that's much creepier, actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, like, if that's what was going down, that would kind of make sense, you know?
Yeah. And it's really interesting. It's been really, really interesting. They use a lot of stuff where I'm like, well, that's kind of you know, at least in terms of like witchcraft practice, there's some, every once in a while they bring something out where I'm like, well, that's kind of accurate, or yeah, that at least has some historical roots or connection. But again, I'm not turning to the show for accuracy or historical. This, you know, my history lesson of the day. It's not, that's not what this is. That's fun. It's a fun show. And definitely very check cool. it out for Papa Dough Bone. So
yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's it. This has been fun. I enjoy talking about sex with you.
Same here. That was no. I'm glad we finally did that episode. See how I saved that?
Yeah, that was nice.
I'm glad we finally talked about it.
Oh man! Finally, I'm not even gonna go there. Anyway,
yeah, no.
That's fun. So yeah, so stay tuned to the blog and the podcast and all that, and. If you want to write to us, you can write to us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. There's always the blog, too, the website, which is just compass and, blah, 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 which is just newworldwitchery.com.
Mm-hmm. You can follow us on Twitter or find us on Facebook as well. I think that's cool. About it. Lane, thank you so much. I enjoyed talking to you tonight.
Thank you. Me too.
Everybody else, thanks for listening.
All right. Be well.